This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, June 21st of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, an audiologist will walk us through how to identify and prevent early hearing loss. Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars shares her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. Then Kim Mooney will be in for her quarterly program on death and dying. Today's topic will examine opportunities and threats to Colorado's end-of-life choices. Then at 9:30, Ginger Perry will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still coming up, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's Ryan Bigham.
Six people are facing charges for allegedly forging petition signatures and information to influence last year's Republican primary ballot for the 7th Congressional District. According to the State Attorney General's office, the Carl Anderson for Congress campaign hired petitioning firm Grassfire LLC to acquire the required signatures for Anderson to be on the ballot. The six individuals employed by Grassfire delivered the completed petition under affidavit that they had seen each individual's signature made in their presence. The Colorado Secretary of State's office reviewed and rejected the finished petition, stating that there were a large number of signatures in the petition that did not match voting records, as well as signatures from deceased individuals. All six defendants have been charged with one felony count of attempting to influence a public servant, along with other misdemeanor charges. The candidate, Carl Anderson, is not suspected of any criminal behavior. Members of Boulder's Police Oversight Panel and city staff will hold a community conversation this evening. Poor Zhejiang Kit has more.
According to the press release, city staff will present changes to the Police Oversight Panel ordinance and hear feedback from the community. The meeting comes as the work of the Police Oversight Panel is at a standstill after Lisa Sweeney Moran, for what a third-party investigator called too anti-police to serve on a police oversight panel. Members of the police oversight panel halted work in protest to Sweeney Moran's removal. Sweeney Moran told KGNU that until the council rewrites the ordinance, POP will continue to strike.
They need to give the police oversight panel an ordinance that is strong, that is comprehensive, and that is in line with what is requested from them.
Last week, the POP nominated two more panelists to fill vacant spots left by Sweeney Moran and Sarah Holt, who resigned last month. Boulder City Council established the Police Oversight Panel in 2020, during the peak of the protests against the murder of George Floyd. In 2019, a Boulder police officer pulled a gun on a Black Naropa University student. The meeting will begin this evening at 5 p.m. at the Boulder Public Library's Canyon Theater. For KGNU, I'm Poor Zhejiang Kit.
A man is dead after reportedly exchanging gunfire with Windsor police officers Monday night. The officers were responding to a call about a potentially armed, intoxicated man who was claimed to be argumentative. Police say the man had a shotgun and fired three rounds before being shot by the responding police officers. The man was later pronounced dead at a local hospital. The Weld County Coroner's Office has not yet released the man's identity. A woman who was hospitalized in critical condition after nearly drowning in Boulder Creek last Thursday has died. Authorities report that there is no suspicion of foul play. A city press release indicates the 48-year-old woman entered the water to help a family member and was swept away by the current. First responders performed CPR on the woman after she was rescued from the creek. This has been Boulder's fifth water rescue in the last 2 weeks. City officials are urging community members to engage with city water safely and recommend keeping an eye out for strong currents, cold temperatures, and deep water. Denver City Council may vote this week on whether to outsource its migrant response to a private security contractor. Kira Zizzo has more.
Denver has accommodated almost 12,000 newly arrived migrants since December. The majority of the response has been coordinated by community partners and city employees. Nine News reports a committee is due to vote today on awarding a $40 million contract to Garda World Federal Services and its subsidiary, Aegis Group. Garda World is a federal contractor for the U.S. Departments of Defense and Homeland Security. Aegis boasts expertise in protecting oil fields in Iraq. Garda World has started contracting out migrant response services with cities like El Paso, San Antonio, and Chicago, as well as the state of Florida. For KGNU, I'm Kira Zizzo.
Denver is using federal funding to support another conversion of a former hotel to provide housing for the homeless. The new funding gives the Colorado Coalition for the Homeless $10 million to reshape the former Clarion Hotel with help from Denver's Department of Housing Stability. The money from the project will create 108 income-restricted rental studios and 107 single-occupancy rooms functioning as a shelter. The CCH renamed the Hotel Renewal Village and are promising that the shelter will only serve individuals making between 30 to 50% of the area's median income. Thorn Nature Experience, an environmentally focused childcare center and day camp program, broke ground on its new nature center in Lafayette this week. Thorn chose the Lafayette Tech Center near Coal Creek as the site for the building, securing it with a $1 million payment last year. Donors funded a large amount of the remaining necessary funds, an estimated $3 million. Keith DeRosier, Thorn Nature's Experiences executive director, stated that the location would help the camp by providing office and support spaces for their programming. The planned nature center will also have several community use spaces for when Thorn's programs are not running. As of now, it is planned to open in June of 2024. For today's weather, the National Weather Service is forecasting a high of 83 degrees today in Boulder, with showers likely after 5 p.m. Tonight, a low of 54 degrees with thunderstorms likely before 5 a.m. In Denver, a high of 87 degrees with a 40% chance of thunderstorms before 5 p.m. Tonight, a low of 57 degrees and thunderstorms likely before 4 a.m. In Fort Collins, a high of 76 degrees with showers also likely before 5. For KGNU, I'm Ryan Bigham.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm Shannon Young. People attending loud concerts or listening to music on their earbuds this summer should be aware. Millions of young adults worldwide are at risk of hearing loss. A quarter of adults under 70 already have impaired hearing. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Nicholas Reed, an audiologist at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, who says with every new wave of technology, new groups of people end up with hearing loss.
Pre-early 2000s, I mean, it really was like a free-for-all. And if you remember, things like the Discman and the Walkman could really get cranked up. And you probably remember like the late 80s, early 90s culture too was like, louder is better. And we really, really were playing with fire there for a while. But then we hit like the digital era, and a lot of devices did get some regulation, particularly Europe. European countries are very aggressive with standards. And then in the US, we're sort of like quasi-regulated, but laissez-faire, like, you know, yeah, do your thing. So we're not completely unregulated, but at the same time, you know, it's possible to turn up sound in some devices.
So I actually just learned recently that you can go into your phone and set it so that it doesn't go louder than a certain level, which is 85 decibels. That is the recommended limit that you should not surpass. Why 85 decibels and how loud is that?
Yeah, so 85 decibels, right? Which is pretty loud. That's like a loud restaurant, seriously loud restaurant. Over an 8-hour period is considered potential damage by OSHA. But like, that's the thing, is it's over an 8-hour period. It's a long period. But something like 130 decibels, you know, you've got seconds before it causes damage, right? So it's a very like, you know, extreme scale where, you know, you can be pretty loud and deal with it for a while, but if you're sitting next to a jet engine at 120, 130, you just have seconds. So to me, I would think that the goal with these phones would be more like give you a setting that is, you know, hey, you could listen to this for 2 hours before potentially causing damage, just set it below that 85. So it's sort of always outside of the range. 85 is plenty loud, believe me. We've all been in restaurants that were way too loud, and it's like loud enough to mask out a conversation.
Hmm. So someone could actually get hearing damage from working in like a really loud restaurant?
I mean, you're probably on like the borderline levels. Yeah, there are restaurants that are like really loud. But remember, that's 8 hours of like continuous exposure. Restaurants don't tend to work that way. They tend to be like 2 hours of really loud, 4 hours of, you know, almost nothing happening. So, you know, it's a cumulative thing. Like it's happening over a period that would have to happen to cause damage.
What does time have to do with it? Why would a longer period of time with the same sound affect your ears differently?
So without going overly into like physiology, it's kind of like, I mean, this is really simplifying it, but you're like, it's like stepping on grass, right? It doesn't necessarily destroy the grass when it happens once, right? The grass comes back, but you can see it's matted down and then slowly, little piece by piece, blades come back up. Mm. But if you walk on that grass enough in a short enough time period, that grass is going to go away. And that is literally what is happening with those hair cells, is they are being damaged repeatedly over a brief time period, like, you know, within that 8 hours or within 4 hours at a certain amount. And that will cause irreparable damage to those hair cells. And they will not come back up, if you will. They will not stand up straight again. And when they're gone, it is one of the only areas of our body that there is no regeneration at all. Once it's gone, it is gone.
Huh. So what about people who already are experiencing hearing loss or who wear hearing aids? For example, my dad wears a hearing aid and he listens to music on his earbuds. Is he at risk of turning up the levels too high and then exposing himself to even more hearing loss?
You know, it's hard to say if he's at risk or not. Like just because you have hearing loss doesn't mean what's loud isn't still loud. A really important phenomenon that most people do not understand, honestly, is that hearing loss is all about the soft end of things, right? It's about not being able to hear and access really quiet information. But what's loud is still loud. And so with full hearing, you can sit in a thunderstorm and the thunder is really loud, but you also hear that pitter-patter of raindrops on the grass or on your roof or something like that, or the trees and the wind blowing. And with hearing loss, you start to lose that wind blowing. You don't hear it anymore. You start to lose the pitter-patter of rain, but that thunder is still the exact same loudness, right? You still have access to it. So loud noise is still potentially damaging. Now, the phenomenon of the earbud versus hearing aid is sort of fascinating. Essentially, hearing aids do a lot more than just make things loud. You tend to lose high-pitched sounds, but not low-pitched sounds. Most hearing loss looks like that. And so the hearing aid is actually only helping usually with high-pitched sounds where we need the help. And they're also trying to give you back dynamic range, because you can imagine if what's loud is still loud and we just make everything louder, then you would hate hearing aids, right? They would be terrible. So instead, we take the sound and we compress it and we literally like shrink it all down and then play it back to you in your hearing aids, sort of in a compressed scheme. So you're still getting the full breadth and dynamics of sound, but for you, with your specific hearing loss.
I know that a lot of people who experience hearing loss, for them, it can be isolating and frustrating. Tell us about some of the emotional and cognitive effects of hearing loss.
Absolutely. So a lot of complex things going on. You know, at a high level, right, there's this population level research, right? So we look across and we see that hearing loss is actually associated with higher risk of cognitive decline. It's also associated with higher risk of dementia. And, you know, at a social level, we believe that hearing makes it hard to keep up with conversation, right? We start to lose bits and phrases. It sounds like others are mumbling, and maybe we start to tune out. The other thing to remember is when trying to keep up, you know, your brain is very powerful and it can sort of fill in the blanks. But that extra power to fill in those blanks, well, that comes at the expense of something else, right? So you're working overtime just to keep up with the conversation, and that affects short-term and working memory. It actually fatigues people faster. And so there's actually a Nobel Prize winner who came up with this whole theory of cognitive load. And, you know, like at a very simplistic level, you hear people say things like, you only use 10% of your brain. No, malarkey. You use every part of your brain that you can use all the time. And if you take energy from one area and use it on something else, like trying to keep up with conversation with hearing loss, that energy comes at the expense of something else. And so the idea with hearing loss is that, you know, for an individual, is it causes some social withdrawal and social isolation, which may contribute to cognitive decline itself, but it also contributes to fatigue, you know, and hard to keep up with information and this cognitive load where, you're just not encoding things in working memory because you're using all your energy to just keep up with conversation. And these contribute to cognition over time.
What advice would you have for those who are just learning that they're experiencing hearing loss and for the people around them who are trying to communicate?
I actually think it's important that we start to think more about getting baseline hearing tests early in life to see how much we're changing. Because the truth is, the earlier that you start doing something, the better it is, right? The earlier you do something, the more your brain can adapt to it before you've sort of waited too long, right? And the wait too long thing is real. I often compare it to phantom, or like when your limb, like your arm falls asleep or your hand falls asleep. And when you move it, it's kind of painful for a second to get it back, right? You get the tingles. It's the same thing for your brain. That area is not being activated. Mm-hmm. And then when you give it that sound back, it's painful. Like there's a very strange reaction people have to not having heard their toilet flush or hearing like a different version of their toilet flush to all of a sudden getting all that sound back and being like, oh my gosh, I missed that. It's not pleasant. So I'm sort of a believer in, you know, even early on, basic amplification, basic conversations about, you know, I'm struggling a little bit, and things that help are when others remember that with hearing loss, talking fast, shouting at people, not just like repeating the same word over and over again that they can't hear, do not help. Instead, we need to go low, we need to go slow, we need to rephrase rather than repeat, add context to conversation. These are free ways to help overcome some hearing problems.
How do you know if you have hearing loss?
The truth is, most people do not realize that we have hearing loss, right? It's sort of a clarity issue, not a volume issue. So it actually does sound like other people are mumbling. But if you think others are mumbling, that is a key indicator that maybe we should do something about it.
Nicholas Reed is an assistant professor at the Department of Epidemiology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and an audiologist at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. Nicholas Reed, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. Thanks. Have a great day.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make Them Hear You.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas on how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Just about everyone knows a friend or family member who has been affected by Alzheimer's disease. The National Alzheimer's Project Act was first signed into law in 2011. It has provided funding for research and quality of life care for people living with Alzheimer's. The bipartisan NAPA Reauthorization Act and Alzheimer's Accountability and Investment Act, now sponsored by Republican Susan Collins and strongly supported by Colorado Democrat Michael Bennett, would build on the progress made over the last decade and renew America's commitment to fighting Alzheimer's. This year, it was introduced in the Senate on January 30th. Advocates have pushed Congress to continue progress in the fight against Alzheimer's and other dementia. Thanks to bipartisan congressional champions like Michael Bennett, federal research funding has grown and individuals living with Alzheimer's along with caregivers have access to better quality care and support. But much more work remains, which the NAPA Reauthorization Act will help continue. This act is Senate Bill 133, House Bill 619, and it would build on the progress made in the fight against Alzheimer's and other dementia over the last decade by reauthorizing existing funding. It emphasizes the importance of healthy aging and risk reduction for Alzheimer's disease. The new legislation also adds new federal representatives to the NAPA Advisory Council from the Department of Justice, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the Social Security Administration. This also addresses health disparities among underrepresented populations. Closely tied to this is the Alzheimer's Accountability and Investment Act, which was passed in 2014 and sunsets in 2025. the Bipartisan Alzheimer's Accountability and Investment Act is Senate Bill 134 and House Bill 620, which would continue to prioritize Alzheimer's and dementia research for funding at the NIH. The act would require the National Institutes of Health to continue to submit an annual professional judgment budget to Congress to be sure Alzheimer's and dementia research is funded at the levels needed to reach goals set in the National Plan to Address Alzheimer's Disease. With this continued investment, scientists can move forward with basic disease knowledge, explore techniques to reduce risk, discover new biomarkers for early diagnosis and drug targeting, and develop potential treatments. This bill extends through 2035 and supports coordination of federal planning programs and other efforts to address Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. The bill also expands the Advisory Council on Alzheimer's Research, Care, and Services to include additional members to ensure diverse clinical trial participants, at least one person with a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, and representatives from additional federal agencies. If you have thoughts on the National Alzheimer's Project Act and the Alzheimer's Accountability and Investment Act, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. You know, every winter I say to myself, when watermelons are in season, be sure to eat lots of them. Because their season is short, but as we move into the summer months, watermelon is such a blessing. Citrullus lanatus or Citrullus vulgaris, it is a member of the Cucurbitaceae family. Don't be surprised, because watermelon is a relative of so many things, zucchini and cucumber and pumpkin and winter squash and even luffas. They are all in the gourd family. So watermelon is cold, sweet, and alkalinizing. It tastes sweet, but it actually has half as much sugar as apples because it's mostly water. Watermelon are a great source of beta-carotene, vitamin C, potassium, silica, which is great for our hair, skin, and nails. It also contains, in the dark red watermelon, lycopene, which is known to be an anti-cancer remedy, especially good for preventing prostate cancer. And it even has glutathione, which can help prevent cataract formation. When you eat watermelon, it's good to eat down into that white rind because there's chlorophyll in there. So don't just take a few bites. And you know what I really advocate for is watermelon with seeds. Do you know you used to be able to buy watermelon seed? Because the black seed contains something called carbocitrin, which dilates the capillaries and is a traditional remedy for strengthening the kidneys and bladder. I know we've all been told, don't eat a watermelon seed. Your watermelon will grow in your belly. And of course, we know that is not true. Watermelon seeds are an amazing remedy. And to be honest, I'm a little concerned about how so much of our food is being made seedless. Seedless grapes. Seedless oranges, seedless watermelons. And you know what? Seeds are good for the health of our reproductive system. And if we keep making everything seedless, well, then the handmaid's tale will come true. Not really that funny, is it? Watermelons have antibacterial properties. They're antioxidant, anticoagulant, meaning they're going to keep your blood from clumping together. They're diuretic and they're laxative. They lubricate the intestines, they can lift the spirits, they freshen your breath, or a folk remedy for hangover and mouth sores. They're a digestive aid, and they're actually wonderful to do during a cleanse. Now, I'm not saying that everybody needs to go on a fast, but, you know, let's say you just want to take a break from eating so much. One day of watermelon can give your digestive system a rest. Of course, you don't want to fast if you're pregnant or diabetic, but a watermelon cleanse one day during the heat of the summer. And I'm going to go for the reddest watermelon rather than yellow, because I like to shop for colors. A ripe watermelon will be heavy for its size, have a sweet fragrance, and you're supposed to look for watermelon that have at least 2 finger spaces between the white lines. And you've all heard about the thumping the watermelon, like thump means ripe. So watermelon, if they also are a little yellow underneath, that's another way you pick out the good ones. All right, watermelon. You can even blend it up and make popsicles out of it. Great way to cool off on a hot summer's day. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Ryan Bigham, Kira Zizzo, Poor Jaijunkit, Alexis Kenyon, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their work on today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, you can give us a call at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, then Kim Mooney's quarterly show on death and dying. That's coming up after the news headlines from the BBC.